Welcome to the podcast series for AJP Heart and Circulatory Physiology. I'm your host, Kara Hansel-Keehan. Today we'll discuss the article by Campbell et al. Titled, Dilated Cardiomyopathy Mutations in Delta Sarcoglycan Exert a Dominant Negative Effect on Cardiac Myocyte Mechanical Stability. This article published online March 11th, 2016. Joining me today are guest editor Noah Wise-Leader, lead author Daniel Michael, and content expert Aaron Beadle. Let's get started.
Thank you, Kara. Really excited today to be discussing this work out of Dan's lab that focuses on the role of two different mutations in delta sarcoglycan that are linked to the development of dilated cardiomyopathy. It's a really an interesting work because of its importance in understanding the mechanism and the phenotype developed by these disease-causing mutations and an important protein found on the in sarcolemma of both cardiac and skeletal muscle. And what's really unique about these is that we can observe these mutations are linked specifically towards dilated cardiomyopathy. And the fact that this publication also uses a wide variety of different approaches, including cellular, biochemical, and functional assays. So it's very exciting to have Dan here today. And maybe I can start things by just asking Dan to explain some of the main take-home points that he thinks are in this publication. And please go right ahead.
So I think the important things you touched on a little bit is that there are mutations in delta sarcoglycan that have been associated with recessive muscular dystrophy, particularly limb girdle muscular dystrophy 2F. And the interesting thing about these mutations that are associated with dilated cardiomyopathy is that these are dominantly inherited. And so the accepted mechanism for the limb girdle muscular dystrophy is the loss of function of delta sarcoglycan, notably due to loss of expression. And so it wasn't clear up until this point whether the proteins were acting as a dominant negative or the dilated cardiomyopathy phenotype was due to haploinsufficiency. And so we used a model system to express the mutant proteins in cardiomyocytes in culture to see if they were stably expressed and if they exerted any dominant negative effects on cellular function. And so I think the take-home point is that these mutations appear to have a dominant negative effect on myocyte stability, particularly to mechanical stresses. And this effect of these mutations is similar to other studies and where we have loss of function of the dystrophin glycoprotein complex.
Thank you. Yes. Aaron, what would you think would be an impactful contribution of this work to the field in general?
Thanks, Noah. So I think that in terms of the broad impact of this paper, it really helps us in a couple of different areas. One of those is, again, in thinking about the mechanism of cardiomyopathy with this autosomal dominant mutations, like Dan just mentioned. And one of the main challenges there, which he alluded to, is the idea that the cardiomyopathy disease phenotype isn't at full penetrance with these mutations. So only a proportion of people who have these mutations will actually develop cardiomyopathy, but having the mutation greatly increases the probability of cardiomyopathy. So this study, I think for the first time, really helps us to try to understand how that variation in penetrance of the phenotypes might arise. So another aspect of the impact, I think, of this paper is really the elegance of the technique. And so the model that Dan uses here basically takes cardiomyocytes and plates them and allows them to go through cyclical mechanical strain. So to really try to simulate what happens in terms of mechanical strain on a muscle cell during the heartbeat. And so I think that technique then also has a lot of broader applications even outside of the particular disease that we're discussing today.
We kind of take that for granted because that's one of the bread and butter experiments in our laboratory now. But that was actually a nice development by a former postdoc in my lab who developed and validated that technique to be able to plate cells in culture and do these strains. And now we can apply these techniques in larger populations of cells, which can not only give us more data, but also potentially scale up the protocol for screening different molecules or screening different mutations at a much higher throughput than we could before.
Yes, I think that's true, Dan. And I think that that's definitely one of the real strengths of this study and your previous ones that have used this technique, is it's a much more physiological and also potentially, as you said, scalable technique to affect membrane integrity and be able to look at changes that take place in dye uptake as a surrogate for the integrity of the membrane. Maybe, Aaron, did you want to highlight any other strengths of this?
Sure. Well, there is an advance here in our understanding of the dystrophin glycoprotein complex. And while the sarcoglycan complex is part of this greater complex that's essential at our muscle membranes, truly the role of sarcoglycans or their specific function hasn't been as well understood and has perhaps maybe thought to have been a bit of a more minor player, despite the fact that the sarcoglycans are all linked to muscle diseases. So I think Dan's study here really helps us to think more about what the function of sarcoglycans are and the fact that delta sarcoglycan specifically and particularly in the heart seems to have an important role in maintaining membrane stability or guarding against sarcolemmal instability.
Right. So I think that segues nicely into the sort of future directions that might pivot off of this work. Where do you sort of see that going in the future?
Well, I think there's a couple of things that we would like to do. One is that, you know, some of the effects seen in vivo may be due to consequences of the loss of cell integrity. So calcium overload or other mechanisms that are initiated by loss of cell integrity. The other thing, of course, is that this system is amenable to taking these results and now applying them to cells from different species or even different tissues. For instance, the sarcoglycans are expressed in vascular smooth muscle as well as cardiac muscle cells, and of course also in skeletal muscle fibers. And we don't really know why these particular mutations appear to be relatively cardiac muscle specific. And so one possibility is that there's some differences in the complex, for instance, between skeletal muscle and cardiac muscle that we don't appreciate yet.
Excellent. One of the other things that I liked about this study was the fact that you're putting a fairly physiologic load on these cells in terms of its cell stretching, but yet you're seeing ample disruptions taking place. I think that points towards the importance of not just membrane integrity, but as you mentioned earlier, membrane repair and compensating for that as well. So what do you think about being able to distinguish membrane repair versus membrane integrity or membrane fragility in this particular model system? Is that something that you think can be adapted to it?
I think it's possible. As you well know, I think you've tried these experiments as well. The classical membrane repair experiments using 2-photon confocal lasers are a little bit difficult in cardiac myocytes because they seem to be very sensitive to that, even very small levels of membrane damage, and undergo, you know, cellular contractures that prevent imaging of that phenomenon. So I think in some ways that the in vivo tissues or isolated fragments of tissues might be a better approach for looking at membrane repair. But clearly, the distinction between membrane integrity and membrane repair is a little bit challenging because I think there's been several studies that have shown that disruption of the dystrophin glycoprotein complex can also disrupt the classical assay of membrane repair. And so I think actually even just distinguishing those two phenomena is not a trivial process. And I think we need better measures of the membrane repair process besides just dye uptake, because I think we don't fully understand what these specific measures are measuring and what they're telling us, because they're largely indirect.
So that's sort of some of the technical advancements and sort of directions forward. Maybe, Aaron, what do you think might be some of the scientific ways forward here that would help contribute to future directions in the field?
Thank you. I think this is another step forward, building on some work done in transgenic animals by other groups. And Dan's study here is a step forward from that, again, helping us to try to get a little bit closer to understanding why the heart is specifically susceptible to these autosomal dominant mutations. I mean, we still don't know the full answer to that, but I think Dan's work here takes us closer and will lead the way with his model system to help nail it down. So that's an important advancement that I see coming to the field that this study helps to start. I also see Dan mentioned the idea that the system can be used to screen new therapeutic targets. And so that also will help us move the field forward to try to identify factors or agents that might be new therapeutics. I also see the potential down the road that perhaps when we have a patient that goes in for a heart transplant, that after that transplant, that the diseased or damaged heart could be taken out, and the kinds of studies that Dan has done here using the rat, these things could potentially be done on ex vivo human hearts after transplant. And I think that offers us a lot of advances, not just in the muscular dystrophy and cardiomyopathy fields, but across our understanding of heart disease in a broader way.
So just to wrap up, Dan, I thought I might give you an opportunity to talk a little bit about the principal author of this manuscript, Matthew Campbell. Maybe you could just tell us a little bit about how he came to this story and sort of how he's doing in the lab or beyond.
So Matt was a graduate student in our molecular and integrative physiology department, and he came to my lab really interested in muscular dystrophies in general because he has a family member with muscular dystrophy. And so it was somewhat of a personal story, although the family member doesn't have delta sarcoglycan mutations. He's very interested in muscular dystrophies. And he's since moved on to the University of Washington, where he's started a postdoctoral fellowship in David Marcinek's lab looking at mitochondrial metabolism in muscle diseases and cardiac muscle diseases. And so he's continuing on in his trek towards understanding muscle diseases and cardiac diseases associated with muscular dystrophy. And I look forward to seeing more great things from him.
Excellent. Great. Well, we appreciate that and thank him for his hard work. And thank you both for making the time today to go over this great piece of work. And I hope that our listeners had a chance to see some of the highlights of this work and explore the article further. Thank you all and have an excellent day.
You've been listening to an AJP Heart and Circ podcast. For more podcasts, visit us online at ajpheart.physiology.org. Thank you.